kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Cole, you're here because our interview fell apart again.
I mean, it could just be that I'm here because I'm awesome.
Yeah, that too, I guess.
Okay.
Well, you're not usually on the Tuesday / Wednesday shows, so...
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be a reason for it, and it's because this fell apart again.
This is a variation from the norm, but it's okay. Variety is the spice of life, Joe.
Well, if you're worried about things not feeling normal, why don't we talk about a little bit of news? Do you have any news that you want to talk about? Oh, I got something. The Division's getting an X update.
Yay!
You excited, I'm so about excited that?
I am. It doesn't matter for me because I don't have an X.
But it'll look prettier.
It is supposed to, I believe it's finally being up to 1080p for those who aren't on the X as well, though, so that's good, because I'm pretty sure it was like 900 or something. It was not even 1080 yet, so it's good. It's a much needed update. Everything was already stupid pretty in the game anyway, and now it's just going to be stunning. If you've never like looked for screenshots for The Division, now's the time. After the 4K update, do it, because they just, you can get lost just in the way the game looks.
I know you're huge into The Division. I should just make you play with me sometime to just go through the story.
I do that all the time. I tell people, look, I need excuses to go back and play somewhere, because I'm one of those few people. I have every fucking achievement for the DLC and all. I have completed this game 4 times over.
God damn.
I have 20, I can't remember now if it's 2400 or 2700, somewhere in that crazy mess. I have an obscene amount of hours, but I haven't even gone back to, like, with the 1.8 update, they brought out the classified gear and shit like that. And I haven't even gone back to get the classified gear, because I'm like, well, new gear's great and I'm excited for it, but I have literally done so much in the game, like it wouldn't progress me toward an achievement or anything. So
I have no idea what classified gear is in the game.
Classified gear, when the game first came out, you could have a set of 4, not even when the game first came out. I think they introduced the gear around 1.4 or 1.5. But you could put together 4 pieces of gear, and the more gear you had in the same set, the more benefits it gave you. So say I run Reclaimer. So if I had 2 pieces of Reclaimer, I got like an increased radius on a med box. Or if you had a 4 piece, you could revive your teammates more quickly, things like that. And I can't even keep up because they change Reclaimer so much because people bitch about it a lot. But Reclaimer is more like meant for support players. Like when they first released it, it was, oh, you could use give your whole teammate explosive bullets if you use the explosive bullet perk or whatever, and they bitched about that because they were getting pummeled by people with Reclaimers. Now it's more for like health, and then they still bitch because I think I've had videos where I would just put down my med box and run in circles inside the med box and people couldn't kill me. And I would just run in circles and wait for my friend to get there because he would run a DPS build. And then once we were both inside the circle, people couldn't kill either of us.
Oh, God.
I'm very good at specking in and overpowering myself.
I could tell. Yeah, I'm gonna have to play through it with you sometime.
Yeah, now with the new classified gear, instead of going up to just 4 piece sets, you can have a 6 piece set, and so you can power it up even more. Which is just exactly what people don't want me doing.
I just have this feeling if I don't step in, you can talk about The Division for like 3.5 hours by yourself.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, an X patch is coming, so that's neat.
Yay!
Any other news?
Ghost Recon.
More Wildland. Tom Clancy. What's going on with...
Also, getting updates.
Ooh.
Free ones for year two.
Yay. Like what?
I like that they're, hold on a second, because I like that they're taking the same approach that they did with The Division and giving out freebies for year two. But they are, and I think I moved my paper. I did.
You spend 20 minutes writing all this down before we start, and you lose the paper already. We've been recording, let me see here, for just over 5 minutes, and you lost your paper already.
I didn't lose it. I just turned two pages because I was looking at other notes. I have notes on notes. My notes have notes. Okay, so Ghost Recon Wildlands will be getting 4 major free special operations updates with different themes for each update. So I haven't played Ghost Recon Wildlands yet. I have it. I fucking should have played it, but I only just got it.
Hey, so you're turning into me.
Yeah. It's horrible. I hope I don't start losing my hair.
On the bright side, you don't have a Grim Reaper statue sitting on your shelf and you still haven't played the game.
That's kind of terrible.
Yeah, it is. I did an unboxing for it. If people want to go back and look at that video, still haven't fucking played it, but I have it.
So I haven't, I picked it up as part of the spring sale. Not even for me, although I was like, ooh, Ghost Recon. But my husband wanted it because his birthday is coming up this month. And so I was like, $20, I'm done. Happy birthday, motherfucker.
His birthday's coming up and he already has Mud Runners.
Yeah, he's not even going to play Ghost Recon. He's still going to be playing Spin Tires. But he will get to enjoy four free, blah, I can't talk today, 4 free updates as part of year two. This will include the first update, which is coming out on the 10th, the day before his birthday even. So
timing.
And it will be Special Operation 1, which will add teammate customization, a new PvP mode called Sabotage, which is objective holding, and 5 new maps, which is pretty damn impressive. 5 maps is a lot. Think of how much Call of Duty charges for 5 new maps.
$70.
And Ghost Recon is getting them for free.
Nice.
It gets 15 per pack for Call of Duty, technically.
Eh, close.
Unless they've upped it. Maybe they upped it. I haven't paid attention.
Fuck if I know. I'm tempted. Best Buy this week has their Best Buy exclusive Infinite Warfare Legacy Edition with like buttons and shit on sale for $30. And
you don't even like Call of Duty.
I enjoyed Call of Duty 4, and it includes the remake of it.
Yeah.
So I figure for $24 because of the discount, getting the remaster, and then another game I'll never touch, and some fucking pins, because, you know, pins are awesome.
Pins.
I'm considering it. I don't know if I'm going to do it, but, you know, I'm a whore, so.
Speaking of spending your money, if the free update isn't enough for you, you can get a year 2 pass for Ghost Recon Wildlands, which will run $30 and will include all 6 of the Ghost War classes, including a week of early access and exclusive customization packs for your team customization, as well as 4 special ops battle crates and 4 Ghost War battle crates, which are Ghost Recon's loot boxes that we just learned about.
Yay, loot crates.
Yep, but apparently they don't affect anything as far as like beyond customization and appearances. And you can't get duplicates. So as long as you don't already have all the shit, these new crates are probably going to be snazzy.
Oh, I'm wrong. It doesn't come with buttons. It comes with an icon pack. That's what it is. A prestige icon pack and socks.
Socks?
Yes.
What do you do with an icon pack? Like, does it just...
Fuck if I know. It's just...
Is it just like pins, but without a pin back on it?
I'm just looking at a picture on a website. I don't know what they actually are, so... But instead of $95, it's only $30. And then the discount for Gamer Club, $24. I might jump on that.
I wish magnets were better, like more included more instead of pins. I don't have any use for pins. I would just like pin it to my curtain and be like, there it is. That's the thing. I'll never leave the house. Nobody would ever see it.
If I get it, I'll take a picture and send it to you.
Okay. I want to know. I have questions now. Maybe they're magnets. Maybe you could glue them to a magnet and put them on the fridge and then be happy.
Maybe. Win-win.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that you own Infinite Warfare. But, you know, I'm not buying it for that anyway if I get it. I'm clearly buying it just for the socks.
You got to take the L where you can, I guess.
But any other news, or should we move on to the reviews? Because I know we have a bunch to get through today.
Let's go.
Cool. We are going to kick things off with MX vs. ATV All Out, developed by Rainbow Studios, published by THQ Nordic, released March 27th on Xbox One and PS4 for $49.99, Steam for $39.99. Choose between bikes, ATVs, UTVs, refine your rider style at your private compound, and blast across massive open worlds to compete head-to-head in various game modes. The all-new freestyle mode allows you to win with style and crazy stunts, or go all out and show your riding skills in multiplayer. Cole, what did you think of MX versus ATV All Out?
Holy shit, nobody told me that there could be this much in a racing game. Like, the more I'm flipping through it, the more I'm just like, why are there so many options? It's a racing game. Just put me on a track and let me go. There are so many different tracks and so many different ways to play that I was just blown away. I don't think there's enough time in the world to really go through all of this.
Let's start go with the Cliff Notes version then.
That's basically what I have. But it does start you in a semi-open world. There's a unique little base, if you will, that you start with, and you have your little bike and your riders on it, and you can just zoom around this area to go to all the different training locations. You can choose the order to tackle the training. You can just not do it if you don't feel like you need it, but I'm an idiot when it comes to racing games. I needed it. So, the training itself is actually very mundane. I think I could have handed it to the dog and he could have done it. It's just pull the trigger, go forward.
One of the opening tutorial missions is like, hold the trigger to move, and then you do like 10 laps on the course, and it's like, congratulations.
Yeah, you're fantastic. Yay. And then it does get more complicated from there, though, to the point that it actually gets a little overcomplicated. And that's kind of my biggest gripe, is that if it was just pull the trigger and go and stay that way with like lean left or lean right to balance yourself, I'd probably be a little better off. It tries to kind of flip over from the arcadey race style into a more simulated racing style. And that's where I'm just like thrown out the window because it gets into, you know, holding your clutch, and it starts talking about whip this and whoosh that. And I'm like, I don't even understand these terms, but the training is just like, hey, we told you what to do. Bye. Good luck. And you're just like, okay, well, rip. Once you're set loose from the training, you can stay in that compound and use that as like a continued practice mode. It's entirely free roam. You can just do flips or, you know, follow tracks or whatever you want to do to continue practicing. It's a good thing to do. And this is kind of where I let myself practice, and it was okay if I fucked up. I didn't have to go into a race and die horribly to get a grasp of the game's physics.
Yeah, you could die horribly trying to get collectibles instead.
Die horribly in the compound doing it. It was just there is the predefined track, and there are the jumps and stuff. So it was good for me to just fuck around in that compound a while. Once you've got the hang of the game, then you're going to want to press the start button. This is where it like deviates from an open world. You don't, you know, ride your bike anywhere to start a race or whatever. You just press start, and then you tab over to events, and it's like, okay, well, now what? I did bring up the whole customization thing, and I want to go back to that, though, because this was where I was really impressed. Not to say that the character models or anything are like, gorgeous, but there are a lot of options, right down to, you know, being able to choose, you know, is it a male rider? Is it a female? What's the rider's name? You get to pick your jersey number and your, all of your gear. You get to choose what your bike looks like. You can choose between, motorcycles, ATVs, and even UTVs, which are, we call them utility vehicles. Apparently they're used for racing. I didn't know this.
Everything could be used for racing.
You can race on a milk crate if you're really determined, I suppose. But this, you know, you have your options of going into the dealership and buying extra vehicles. You can't do it right away because you're too poor for that, but you can change your clothes and stuff from the start. In addition to setting up your own rider, you can actually go into what's called the BRAAP, which is B-R-A-A-P, and stands for Build Rider and AI Profile. This lets you customize the AI you're going to race against, including their appearance, their name, their skill set. If you've got somebody that has just really got on your nerves and you want to embarrass them in your game, you can create a rider profile to little Johnny down the road and just demolish him and make yourself feel better.
And just clip his back tire every lap.
Little make Johnny's him never going to win.
Son of a bitch. Hate that kid.
He's, you know, if the paper boy broke your window, make an AI profile for him.
And he's just a little son of a bitch too. Fucking kid.
Probably. This is why I live in the middle of nowhere, because I don't like anybody. So
how many of your mortal enemies did you put in the game?
All of them.
Sweet. Yeah, I gotta say, I put some time into MX versus ATV as well. I'm impressed with how much there is to do as well. My first thought going through my head was, we've played a bunch of ATV games on the show. We've covered a bunch of them. This feels like the next gen version of MX versus ATV that the previous outings wanted to be.
Yeah.
It feels like this is the one we've been waiting for.
There is definitely a lot to keep you busy, because once you finally set up all your AI and your own customization, there are 5 game modes. You can choose from series, which is multiple events all wrapped up together, or you can just play a single event at a time. There's the online, there's time trials. Then there's, it's called arcade mode, but it's just split screen multiplayer. Which I did not try out, unfortunately. I also tried online, but I was not able to find a game. And this is one of those cases where I have to, you know, for disclaimer purposes, say I play at a really crazy hour of the day. I play really crazy early in the morning after my kids go to school. So it's like 6, 7 a.m. Eastern time that I'm usually on. And so I'm not surprised when I can't find a game in games like this. If I could even try to play at, like, you know, an evening hour or on the weekends, I'm sure it would probably be better and I'd have better luck at that, but
you're too busy playing Rocket League then.
I'm too busy playing Rocket League then, or, you know, parenting, which is not, you know, not the best way to spend your Friday night, but
I told you, Valium and rum, that takes care of the kids for a couple hours. You'll be good.
Why is the rum gone? Because little Johnny needed a nap.
No, mommy needed some goddamn quiet time.
In addition to the different game modes, you can then choose the race type that you're going to play. So you have Supercross, you have Nationals, Opencross, Waypoint. You can just freestyle, which is scoring points, or just free ride and do whatever the fuck you want to do on each track. I didn't even get to count how many available tracks there were. It was just, the list seemed to go on and on. There were ungodly number of tracks that you could play on. So between the difference in events and the different you know, race types with the sheer ridiculous number of tracks and opportunities for customizing your AI, there's no chance to get bored with this game. There's always something you could go do. My only real complaint is you mentioned that this was the next gen MX versus ATV you guys were waiting for. It doesn't look very next gen.
Yeah, it's not the prettiest game, but there is a lot going on in it.
Yeah.
I think the models aren't the greatest, but the tracks look pretty good.
The dirt, that's the thing. Like, the dirt and the tracks, they look great. And the borders around the tracks, like the hay bales or the tires or whatever is there, depending on where you are, all of that is really, really good. If you are out where, like, if some of the tracks, like for freestyle and stuff that I played, were indoors, and those looked fine. Those looked really, really good. But when I noticed issues was like in the compound at the beginning and some of the races that were outside where the trees don't have a lot of foliage, you could see screen tearing pretty bad. And that may, I don't know if my fact that I'm on a 1S affected that versus like maybe it's a little better. I don't know if it's enhanced for Xbox One or not, or if maybe just the more processing power would have helped, but I did have screen tearing in those instances and like texture pop. Other than that, it was really fun, and I wasn't like jarred by the screen tearing or anything. I was just like, oh, well, that's a thing that's happening. And I continued on.
It is so, X enhanced. I really didn't notice a lot of screen tearing on my end, but that might just be because I was playing on the X.
On an X. So that could just be one of those.
Or I could have been drunk. One of the two.
Maybe. Well, also, that's where the rest of the ROM went.
God damn right. I'm telling you, I tell everyone about this coconut rum and Mountain Dew. It is amazing.
I do like coconut rum. The one time I tried to get drunk, I actively tried to get drunk. I've never been drunk, but I did try once.
Oh, you got to work harder.
I know. I tried once, and I drank a whole bottle of coconut rum by myself.
A whole bottle, and you didn't get drunk?
And I didn't get drunk.
What the fuck?
I had alcoholic parents, so apparently I have some tolerance.
Holy shit.
I tried so hard, and then I was just like, that didn't work. I can't afford this. This is too expensive of a hobby.
Well, I guess the I guess the last question here is, if you've got $50, which is better to do, get MX versus ATV All Out or a shitload of rum?
MX versus ATV All Out is definitely going to be the better option here.
So your official verdict on this one?
It's a very solid try it. Well, I think, though, I wish I could give it a buy it on the standout that it probably looks better on the X.
Well, now you just need to get an X.
That's one of those hitches. Like, apparently I need to sell my husband's kidney on Craigslist or something.
Yeah, it's his. You don't have to worry about it then.
Yeah. They don't want mine. I take chemo.
You just don't tell them that you take chemo, and then you sell it, and they get it, and they're like, what the fuck? And you're like, sucker.
Enjoy your chemo kidney, bitches.
But you and I have one more game to talk about, and that's called The Adventure Pals, developed by Massive Monster, published by Armor Game Studio. This one is out April 3rd on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $14.99. Your birthday is ruined when your dad is dadnapped by a madman. Now you, your pet rock, and Sparkles the giraffe will have to fight your way through levels filled with platforming, bizarre enemies, and big bosses in the name of friendship and hot dogs to save the world. If you can't tell, this game is a special kind of crazy, and I am in love with this game.
How do you not love a game where you have to save old people that are being turned into hot dogs?
I know you've put a ton of time into this one, probably more than I have, and I've been addicted to it. So what do you think? What is Adventure Pals?
Adventure Pals is an adventure platformer with some hack and slash elements. So you will run into enemies in little spurts that you just button mash the shit out of X to get rid of. It's meant to be kid friendly, and so it's got a lot of humor. It mimics that Saturday morning cartoon style with a little bit of a kawaii element to it. It's just super adorable, but it's also super quirky, and that makes me just love everything about it. I've had so much fun with this game. I beat the campaign, and it's very rare for me to get to say when I do a review that I sat down and went back to Achievement Hunt, because I have so much other reviews to go do that normally I'm like, okay, I whizzed through the campaign, uninstalled, next, let's go. And it's just like an assembly line of game playing. And yet I was like, no. I have to know what happens if I get all the cupcakes.
Don't ruin it for me, because I'm about halfway through it, and I've been diligently hunting down all the cupcakes in this game, as well as the sticker packs. You know, by the way, the cupcakes you feed to a fat ass cat who then shits out an egg filled with a hat.
It's so good. Well, sometimes you get hats, but you also get costumes for your rock.
Yeah.
So my Mr. Rock is wearing a pizza costume for me.
Same.
I love the pizza costume. And so yeah, it's literally just so quirky and weird that you just get lost in everything going on with that.
Someone asked me what the game was like, and I told them if I didn't know who the developer was, I would have thought this was something from the Behemoth. The visual style, the humor, the music, everything just feels like a Behemoth game, but instead of having the more risque humor and the more violent content that some Behemoth games have, this is a lot more family oriented. And while it's crazy, it's not, you know, like, it doesn't have that tinge of obscenity with it.
Yeah.
Like when you kill an enemy, you don't lop their head off, stuff like that.
No. They just kind of go poof. And that's that. There's not any blood or gore. It's definitely kid-friendly. And that's one of the other things I liked about it, because I like platformers, but we've all heard me bitch about, oh, I have rheumatoid arthritis, and sometimes shit's hard to play. And that goes for platformers a lot. Like, I just get tired of the repetitive, you know, trying to maneuver through a world. This was easy enough that I could do it and play the game for a long time and move through quite a few worlds without having any problems, because I was just switching up what I was doing just frequently enough that I wasn't like straining my wrists or my fingers. And it was one of those where it was, you had to think about the puzzles a little, but it wasn't so much that you were just getting stressed out and trying to get through it. You were just play it and done. There's an achievement for completing one of the worlds in under 3 minutes. I hate anything speed running because it is not arthritis friendly, and I still did it in 2 minutes and 32 seconds.
Nice.
So I was just like, oh, I did it first try, and I was like, well.
I think mine was 212, so suck it.
That arthritis life, though. But I was surprised, because I was like, ugh. This speedrun achievement's going to take forever. I'm not going to be able to do it. And this is going to be what keeps me from the completion. No, that's not what's keeping me from the completion. I'll tell you what's keeping me from completion. I gave a whale the wrong underwear.
What?
And I don't know where to get the other underwear.
How could you?
I'm going to have to replay again just to get to the whale and find again, different underwear.
Let's repeat that for the people who didn't get it. You gave the whale the wrong underwear.
That's the game in a nutshell.
Like, if it were up to me, I would just rave about this game for a solid 20 minutes if I could, but we ain't got time for that. So no. I didn't have any problems with it. Like, I don't have any gripes, any nitpicks, anything with this game. Do you have anything that you didn't like about it?
I did have a couple of hitches. Primarily, when I first started the game, I was having a glitch where if I died, it would go to this very lovely screen.
Yes, that has been patched and fixed. That was a known issue.
Yeah, that was fixed. I did have it happen again after the patch, though. It happened with the final boss.
Ooh.
I died. Everything went white. I went back to, I had to crash the game, loaded it back up, went back into the battle with the final boss, and the first boss that you, the final boss is a multiple stage thing. And so I had beat the first part of it. And so there was like a check mark where I had done it, but not a crown where I had done it all. And I had to start all the way at the very beginning and work all the way back to the final boss again. It only did it the one time, but it was the exact same glitch as from before. And I was just like, no. But so hopefully since they were aware it was a thing in the beginning, maybe they'll, you know, already have know a fix in the works and be able to patch it out later on.
I wonder if that's something specific to the final boss, because I've died a handful of times and I didn't run into any kind of crashes after the patch.
I purposely died a few times, because A, I was testing out the patch, and B, there's an achievement for dying 9 times. So I purposely was just like flinging myself off of different cliffs in different levels to see if it had been patched, and it was fine up until I got to that boss. So it just, something went sideways at some point and it glitched again. But it was fixable. I was eventually able to beat it. My only other complaint, aside from that odd desk glitch, is that some of the later levels, particularly when you're in what's called Crabtropolis, I think it is. Yeah,
the fucking names.
When you're in Crabtropolis, I had a couple of levels where I don't know if it was like a frame rate drop or something happened to make everything kind of move in slow motion. And it wasn't intended to be, because there would be little bursts where it would speed up and be okay. And then it would just, everything would move slow again. And this was, the enemies were moving slow, the traps, the puzzles, just everything was slow motion. It was so bad that I just skipped, like I was just trying to get through it so that I could review. And when I wanted to go back to get all the cupcakes and stuff, I just did it separately. And it was still like it. And I was just like, shit. It's still doing it, but yeah. I don't know. I tried shutting down. I tried restarting the Xbox. I force closed the game. I saved and exited, and just I could not get it. It was about 3 levels, and they weren't even all in the same world. Like it would be in one part. Each world is broken down into the levels, and then each level is broken down into 5 sections. So it would be like one section of this world, one section of that world, but it was all in the Crabtropolis area. And there were about 3 of them in all that did it. No rhyme or reason to it. I don't know what happened, but it was just like, it decided to be cranky with me. But hopefully
those will be addressed as well, yeah.
Yeah, a little polish can go a long way, but I really enjoyed the game. I loved it. I loved that the stickers, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the stickers that you're earning, but some of them are throwbacks to other indie games, including some that I have reviewed for this very show, like Pinstripe. There's some Binding of Isaac references. There are,
well, the game is packed with references in general, like the wells after you beat a stage where the character just straight up says, yeah, it's a lot more sanitary than the green
than
pipes.
Going through sewers. Yeah. Yeah.
Like what? It's so
there's
funny.
A lot of references. There was Hollow Knight references and just so Overcooked, and it was so good. It really was.
Well, then the last question is $15. What is your verdict? Because mine is an emphatic buy it.
Yeah, this is a definite buy it. If you don't buy it, there's something wrong with you. You're missing out.
You absolutely are. But yeah, that is it for you. I have a bunch of other people to talk with, so I'm going to let you get going and enjoy the rest of your day. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Buy the Adventure Pals and play it, but don't 1K it before me.
All right, moving on. We are joined now by Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good today. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. How's the weather been for you?
Atrocious.
Atrocious.
Not as bad as some people's having it. As you said earlier, you got the brunt of Stormtown.
Oh, God.
Whereas I woke up to...
Am I on speaker?
Yes. I can turn that, though, if you want. I was like, you didn't say anything, so it must be okay. I'm going to do it. It's how I roll. Okay, speaker's convenient.
Yeah. All right. Fuck it. We'll just start over since we're only a second in. All right. Moving on. I am being joined by Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing?
No, I'm pretty good today. All things considered, though, weather is, of course, a general ridiculous craptard as it likes to be lately.
That is a running theme with us when we do reviews together anymore is the goddamn weather. I got to know, did you guys get snow?
We got no snow.
Nothing.
Not a drop.
I'm still 4 fucking inches last night.
The weather wants you to know it still got you by the balls.
Yesterday, my windows were open. Last night, we got 4 inches of snow. Today, I was walking around without a jacket on.
Yeah, see, that I couldn't do. I was wearing a damn coat down here. It's chilly.
It was in like the 60s. What the?
This weather is kick-caboodle weird. That's my acceptance. I run with it, and that's all there is to it. Weather doesn't know what it wants anymore.
You want to know what's even worse? Is my wife sent me a picture that apparently they're calling for more snow on the 8th.
Wait, now I want to check to see if my area is getting it, because I don't want it. But if it happens, it happens. But I keep telling myself I want a little bit more, though, I will admit. It's always that small part of me that's like, I don't like the cold, but if it's going to be cold, I wouldn't mind a dusting on the ground. Yeah. A dusting, mind you. Not a storm. Just a dust. It's aesthetically pleasing. But I don't want to shovel it.
Yeah, because she sent me a picture of projected snowfall totals for our area. Now, again, this... By the time we're recording this, this is a week away from when it's supposed to happen on the 8th, but it's showing my area to get like a foot and a half.
Yeah, that's some poppycock. I mean, you do live up kind of a thing. I don't know. Are you still in a mountainous area, or was that the other area you were in?
It's all kind of mountainous in this area, but even still, the fact that it's going to be early April with a potential foot and a half of snow. Now, I don't think it's going to happen, because how many times have we talked over the past month of like, oh, they're calling for 12 inches of snow. What'd you get? 2.
They're calling for a bombocalypse, or whatever they call it nowadays. Bombogenesis.
Snowpocalypse.
It's like the most bizarre term ever, but I love it. Bombogenesis. Bombogenesis. Weather wish it could be that cool back in the day. What are we getting? A dash of rain? Oh, storm outside? Now we're like, it's bombogenesis out here.
So, yeah, the SML weather report brought to you by, M&M's, I guess.
Brought to you by ridiculously long words. .com.
.com. Anyway, we have some games to talk about. I figure we should jump into those, huh?
I think that's a grand idea.
Might as well, right? Let's start things off with The Witch in the 100 Night 2, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released March 27th on PS4 for $49.99. Follow the 100 Night in its journey through a witch-ravaged world. Young girls are contracting a strange illness and awakening as witches, causing mayhem across Kavala. Along the 100 Knights side are two sisters. Uncover the mysteries of Kavala as you protect them both from harm. This is obviously a sequel to the original, The Witch and the 100 Knight, which is kind of like a top-down slash isometric beat-em-up brawler hack-and-slash action RPG. It's like a shitload of genres all smashed into one. And now...
I was about to say, it's the Nipponichi treatment.
Pretty much. And this is, if you've played the first, you know what you're getting into. If you don't, basically, game starts off, you are a woman who is caring after your sister, but she has the previously mentioned disease. And when she goes in for testing and surgery, things shockingly go awry. And a witch is summoned to pretty much take over the world. If you played the first game, you're on the witch's side, and your goal was to basically kill everything and conquer everything and reclaim the world as yours.
Mm-hmm.
And now The Witch in the 100 Night 2, you kind of bounce between sides a little bit here. I don't want to go too far into the story to give things away, but it's interesting kind of playing the field on this one. I know you put some time into this one as well. What did you think? Is that kind of like on the head?
Pretty much. I feel like they still kept it a little bit on the dark side, because the first 100 night was dark as the Dickens, mm-hmm. with some really volatile content or commentary and stuff like that. But this one, while the witch that you work with on occasion is still pretty foul mouthed, they made it a little bit more lighthearted by having you balance between the witch that has possessed your sister and the girl who is the sister of the other person. So it's essentially you're working both sides of the story progresses and plays through. So it makes it a little bit lighter. And they added a few lighthearted characters in there as well. Like my favorite character is like a drag crow, a drag queen crow. She's awesome, or he's awesome. I don't know what the terminology is for a drag queen, but I know the character is awesome.
It's awesome. Dickens. They are awesome. I don't know.
Let's go with they. There we go. They are awesome. They are awesome.
Agreed.
It's essentially action beatdown structure where you can equip up to 5 weapons on the character, and then you fight with them as a combo string. So you start with the first weapon. Each time you hit the attack button, you switch to the next weapon all the way down to the bottom. And once you have done that, you have done your center damage, and you can also, if you landed the 5th hit, do something called a deplatura, which lets you eat the enemy that you're fighting so long as their health is low enough to consume them.
I'm glad you said that word, because I wasn't going to try.
Oh, yeah, I've had practice. It's eat him! Eat him! And they're just like, deplatura!
I wasn't going to try deplatura. Like, that's beyond my scope of ability right now.
It's such a great, weird word. Like, I wanted to start to, hey, guys, you want to get something? You want a deplatura tonight with me or what? Depla what? I'm going to do so. Man, I'm so hungry. I could deplatura anything.
Is that Mexican? Deplatura? Yeah. That's Mexican, right?
It may be.
Or I mean, Greek. It's Greek with a hero and a deplatura, a nice side of yogurt.
I could deplatura some burritos right the fuck, man. I want some food. But, I mean, this the game, it has its pluses and it has its minuses. Like, I'm not sure if you noticed this during your play or not, but all the environments you go to, while there's a big map, all the environments are kind of randomly generated. And what that ultimately means is that while you'll start out the game feeling like I want to explore the maps and expand on them and see what there is in each nook and cranny of every section, it eventually becomes, I need to get from point A to point B and I'll beat these dudes up on the way.
Yeah.
Because since there's no level structure, there's no sense of needing to complete the map or discover everything there is to discover on the map.
See, I didn't even realize it was all randomly generated, because I really didn't backtrack too much when I was playing. And when I did, I guess I just didn't take notice.
Yeah, it's what happened. What ends up catching it is, like, eventually you'll start, the game will start making you backtrack for different things. Like, you'll go to old map sections, or you might say, go to a map screen and activate one of the waypoints and then warp back to the castle and then warp back to the waypoint and notice that the entire map needs to be uncovered again. Like, that section, you ran around that section at any point and then left and came back, it has to be uncovered again because it's a randomly generated section. It's all new.
I remembered uncovering the map again, but I guess I just didn't remember what the maps looked like previously.
Yeah, it was one of the things where it's like the previous game, I believe it was a little bit more structured because you could 100% sections in that game. So I definitely know I picked up on that quickly because I was a bit into the first game. But worth mentioning also is that they made some, if you played the first game, they made some cool combat adjustments that make the game a bit more fun to play. In the first game, well, not including so much the revival version, but the original game, you could equip the 5 items and you had these things called facet changes. And facet changes were when you sort of changed your armor shell, let's call it that, and it changed the proficiencies of the arm 100 knight. So his efficiency or skill level with swords or spears or hammers or staves, which are the weapon types in the game. So if you were fighting different guys who were weak or strong against different types of weapons, you have to go into your inventory, rearrange your gear, and come out swinging, ready to fight these different dudes. But in this game, you still have the different facets, but you can equip up the 3 different facets at one time. You can switch between them freely, and each facet has its own equipment loadout. So you can kind of go into battle with 3 different, you're essentially controlling 3 different characters one at a time, which is kind of nifty in that regard. I might have a magic 100 knight, or I might have a 100 that focuses on lances and spears. I might have one that's focusing solely on hammers. I might have one that's a hodgepodge between hammers and spears.
That's what I did. I'm awful at managing multiple loadouts and shit like that. So for me, I just did like one of everything except hammers because of how slow they are.
And so the weird part is eventually the game will punish you for that.
I know. I've been getting my ass kicked because of it. And I've been trying, you know, mentally, I've been trying to be like, okay, I need to have one that's focused on, you know, magic. I need to have one that's focused on hammers because of how heavy they are and blunt. I need one that focuses on blades. But in my brain, I'm just like, fuck it. If I hit them with everything, they might not do as much damage, but one of them's going to hurt them.
And that's what I think is amazing. At one point, the game pretty much does work there, where you're like, it works, right? It does the trick. But then two moments in the game eventually kind of screw you on that. Certain bosses, I think later on I got a little bit better, but it didn't change overall. Later on, when you start fighting certain bosses, the game runs on something called a gigacalorie mechanic. I mentioned earlier how you could eat enemies. The reason why you eat enemies is to replenish your calorie intake, because over time you will get tired and you'll get wiped. During map exploration, it's not so bad because there's a number of waypoints around. And if you get tired, you can just run past all the enemies and just eventually get to a waypoint. The reason why you ultimately have to fight is to get good equipment and to level up so you don't get your ass handed to you by bosses. But when you fight a boss, you're kind of stuck. You're sequestered to the room. You have to ultimately win the fight. The boss can pretty much make you work through your entire caloric intake before killing them if you're not smart about how you fight them. So you might have to have an experience. You got to have the right weapons that they're weak against so you can do the maximum amount of damage you can do at any given time. And later on in the game, they introduce auras. Auras are when certain enemies can flip their weaknesses and strengths to different things and at different levels of strengthening. So you might have a guy who's slightly weak to blades. Then he'll activate his aura, which makes him slightly strong against blades. And then when you get him weaker, he'll triple down on it to the point where he nullifies blade damage. You're kind of like, crap, all I'm using is blades. I can't win. So they do play with the system as it goes. It's just that in order to get to that stuff, including like the weapon enhancements and unlocking more facets, you have to get through the fact that areas are randomly generated. You'll spend a lot of time in the forested sections because I would say 50 to 70% of the map is forest.
Maybe I hope you like trees.
Yeah, I hope you like trees, exactly. And enemy variety, I will say it does pick up as you get further in, but for a lot of the game, you're fighting like the same five types of dudes, I'd say. Pumpkin men, frog people, golems, and the
little bug dudes.
Little bug dudes that need to hit with the hammer. But essentially, you're fighting like a lot of the same guys. And then like, I would say maybe 15 hours in the game, holy crap, is a new zone. And there's some enemies here that are new. But mixed amongst those enemies are those guys from before, too. So you'll be fighting. You'll be at the end of the game still fighting golems. So just be ready for that. But I won't lie. There was something compelling about the game that kept me moving. Like, in most circumstances, if I was playing something like that, like where I'm like, man, the enemy variety is lacking, or all I keep seeing these goddamn trees, I probably would have put the game down and just walked away. But I honestly, and this is not because of the review, because I've reviewed games or talked about games to review where I just said, fuck it, it's not worth playing anymore. But in this case, I wanted to keep playing the game. I was having fun beating dudes up. I was having fun switching weapons. I was having fun using different facets with their different four skills and weapon sets. That you could have. Oh, I forgot to mention, you get skills in this game, whereas the first game you didn't. So you get attack skills, five unique to each facet, two passive abilities per facet, and then Tochkas, which are six unlockable totem skills that can be interchanged between all of the facets. So they give you a lot of combat variety. It ultimately ends up becoming a game where it's fun to bash dudes in. The story is surprisingly entertaining. Like, it's not going to turn your head or anything. I mean, it's going
funny.
There's some funny stuff that goes on in that game. Yeah, like funnier than the first. That's for damn sure. It gets dark, but it retains some humor.
I'll never get enough of like a cute anime witch, evil cute anime witch calling people assholes. It just magical to me.
Assholes and cows and shitheads. Surprised she's not right blowing the C-word around. She gets rowdy. She gets really rowdy.
Well, it's still only T-rated, isn't it?
If it's T-rated, I'd be shocked. I honestly think it's probably rated M, but I didn't look because it was digital, so...
Now I want to look it up. What did you think of the inventory system in the game?
Inventory is pretty cool, though I think it's hilarious that in the dialogue sequences, there's moments in the story where they're like, get in the bag or put it in the bag. It's like, it's not his bag. It's his stomach. Get in his stomach. Stop saying bag. There's no bag. But inventory consists of every time you find an item in the game, which you get from either breaking a chest open or beating certain dudes up, you have stomach inventory slots that you eat the item and it sits there. And until you exit the level either by, it's not even either by, exit the level by using a waypoint or beating the chapter, you don't have access to those items. They just sit in your stomach. If you get knocked out, i.e. you lose all your hit points, you lose some of the items in your stomach, a random amount of them. If you lose all of your hit points and you run out of calories, because reviving costs calories, you lose every item in your stomach and you have to start back from scratch, like back at the base. If you beat a level, though, and you actually get to take all your items out of your stomach, they stay in your inventory and they can't be lost. So
you win them forever. I do enjoy the fact, though, if you are running low on calories, you could just digest shit in your stomach.
And you will for a bit. Like, they'll make blue crit. There's like certain expendables that you can get where the purpose is just to sell them for money. You'll probably be eating those here and there until you get more adjusted to how you should ration out your calories.
Yeah.
But honestly, I like the inventory system in the game. It does its job pretty well. And as you play through the game, you unlock stomach slots. So you eventually end up with like 60 something. And it works out pretty well. 64, I think, slots that you unlock.
Yeah.
But it's entertaining. It's good stuff.
Before we get to a verdict, I do want to mention a weird issue that I had while playing the game. I didn't get to play it nearly as much as you, Purnell, because for some reason, it would make my PS4 incredibly loud. It seemed like the fan was just running on max the entire time I played it. I think I even shared a video with you of when I quit the game, you could audibly hear the fan go from a loud roar just to completely silent.
And it might be worth, if they're listening to this review, maybe even addressing it, because I think you were playing on a pro, and yes. I was playing on a normie, and I didn't have the same fan problems, but it makes me wonder if maybe it's related to how the pro's built, that people playing it on the pro as a digital might be experiencing more, issues with how the system runs it. I don't know.
I'm not sure if it's like an optimization thing or just like, I don't know. I haven't really experienced it on other games. I will say today, took apart my PS4, used some compressed air, got some of the dust out. It was a little bit quieter, but it's still noticeably audible with the fan noise. I don't know if it's something with the game, or fuck, for all I know, my 7th PS4 could be going bad.
Yush.
Which is entirely possible given my luck right now. But even with that, personally, I think Witch in the Hundred Night is absolutely worth picking up. I'm giving it a buy. I really enjoyed it. What do you think?
I would have to agree with that, because whereas the original game was more of a try it, I think that so long as you're okay with the aforementioned randomly dumb generated environments, they made a lot of improvements on the gameplay and functionality of the game as a whole. And unlike the first game, I encountered zero glitches as I played through the game. No shutdowns or having to reset the game. It played through just fine.
Nice.
So I think it's quality.
I know. I will definitely be going back and playing it some more once I figure out why it's making my console so loud. Yay!
Hopefully it's an easy fix, but hopefully it's discoverable and mendable.
Hope so. Fuck, for all I know, it's just, I don't know. I'm not even going to say it's my system going bad again, because I don't want to go through that shit again. But next game to talk about is called Danganfeveron, developed by Cave, published by M2. It's coming out April 4th. On Xbox One and PS4 for $34.99. The M2 shot trigger shmup renaissance continues. In 1998, Cave's shoot-em-up Danganfeveron, also known as Fever SOS, blasted into Japanese arcades like a shooting star. Gather your dance energy and get your groove on in the first home console port of this fan favorite that spread dance fever through the arcades. Purnell, tell me about this one, because I'm incredibly jealous that I haven't had time to play this one because it's not out yet.
I will say, in an odd sense, it's a fun game, but I was expecting more from the theme than I got. And what I mean by that is, it is a cave shooter, like, through and through. It's a cave bullet hell shooter. You can choose between three ships. each ship you can choose between a number of different gun types. I say the ships are the gun types. But from those, you can choose between three different bomb types. And what I mean by bombs in this regard is if you tap the gun fire button, you'll spray a type of bullet. If you hold down the button as if you were doing rapid fire, you would ultimately eventually start unleashing like a secondary type of gun instead of your primary. So one of the secondaries is like buzzsaws that home in on the target. Another one is slow bombs that will slowly drive towards the target because it'll home in on a specific guy. And I don't remember what the other one is because I didn't screw with that one because it was stupid. But that's pretty much how the gameplay works. The ships are traditional military-based ships. But where the theme comes in is in the music, which is all surprisingly like dancey and like clubbish. And whereas a lot of typical cave shooters will have the voice going like incoming enemy or danger, danger. In this game, it's a guy straight out of DDR. Like, watch out for the dank flow and some weird stuff. And when you beat levels, a freaking disco ball comes down and like dancing silhouettes of people show up and your score gets tallied. So it's definitely, it adds a bit of a nice bit of panache to the game. Like it's a little weird, but it is a traditional, aside from those aesthetics, it is a traditional cave shooter in my eyes. Unless there's something that's going to pop up in the future where it's like, you've missed unlocking absolute dance mode where the ship dances. Like if that's not a thing, I'm pretty sure I experienced where the theme comes in. But with that in mind, it is a shooter. Now, I'm saying cave shooter, but it's not cave. It's M2, right?
Well, it's developed by Cave and published by M2. So it's like a joint production kind of deal.
I was getting feeling weird. In that case, I was dead on. I didn't even realize it was Cave, and I knew it was Cave. So in your face, Cave.
Anyway. In your face, life, I guess.
Somebody's face. But it's a cave shooter through and through. Like if you've played a cave shooter, you've played this cave shooter. But do you want to play more cave shooters? Typically, the answer is yes. In which case,
if you ever say no to wanting to play more cave shooters, I don't think we should be friends.
Pretty much. Like, they're out there. They're always fun. I mean, it's one of those things like RPGs. Like, a lot of RPGs ultimately end up playing the same way in different way, like different spells, but they all activate the same from a menu system, whatever. But what matters is that you want to play something new. You want a new environment, a new atmosphere. You want new music, new bosses. And that's what you're getting here. New bullet patterns, new bosses, new enemies, new shot patterns. I mean, good stuff. And some hot music. And, of course, just like the previous releases by M2 and K that have been on the Xbox and PS4 and all those guys, they have the ridiculous customization system where you unlock credits as you play the game so you can continue a little bit more each time you play. And then
I love that part.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, it makes it that you can't just outright fly through the game in one shot. You have to ask and get some knocks in before it's like, okay, you want only 10 credits. Go nuts. But there might even be a cap to the point where it's like, okay, if you can't beat on this many credits, you're out of luck, buddy. But there's so many different ways you can customize. You can customize the panels on the left and right side to display specific types of information. It keeps track of your score throughout the entire play. So if you want to like kind of gauge how well you've progressed throughout the entire run, you can watch your scores tally up. It shows the name of the track in the corner that's being played. So if you're like, I really like this music. What track is this? Boss theme. Okay, that's great. You know, but it shows you those things. It's a quality product. It's astounding how they take these arcade games, and even though they're ultimately the arcade game on your console, which in some respect pretty much is good enough because it's what you're buying. You want the arcade game at home. They add a lot of nice bells and whistles to kind of make it as customizable an experience as it can possibly be for you. And it's pretty nice, honestly.
Nice. Now, the biggest question here, this is something we seem to always go over when it comes to Japanese import shmups, the price. Now, to me, I'm familiar with, you know, shmups from Cave and M2 and companies like those costing $50+ on console for a digital game. In my eyes, that's just how it is. Lately, we've been spoiled by some of these Retro Psycho releases and Arcade Archive releases where we see them coming out at $8. With this one at $35, do you feel that this one is worth it in terms of Cave, traditional Cave M2 pricing, where we would see, like, think back to Darius Burst when that came out was $60 brand new?
Well, I mean, not even just that. I can think of some other stuff that even before, like Akai Katana and like Death Smiles, stuff like that. And even when they, the way they release, it's less about, the price is more so about, it's about the person buying the game. Because I feel like when it comes to these games, they already are catering to a very specific type of audience. Like, typically the person who's going to sit there and go, well, it's only got five stages and it's $35. I don't want it. They are probably not the audience that was being pursued in the first place here, because the idea behind cave shooters is you play for mastery. You buy the game or you go to the arcade. If the arcade, if you're lucky enough to have a freaking Dongaran Fever near your home or whatever. But
yeah, good luck on that.
Exactly, right? You go to the arcade, you pop in your quarters, and you ultimately play for skill and being the best. Like, you start out just trying to beat the freaking game, which is hard enough in this damn wrong, right? Five stages, he'll be dying a lot. but once you manage to pull that off, then it becomes a matter of perfection, choosing the right speed of the ship, choosing the right weapon load of the ship, and then going for one, like, one CCs, one clear credits, and just high scores as you do that. So it's more so a matter of, if that's the kind of guy you are, and you like shooters where you're trying to become the man who can beat the game and then maybe even go back for those high scores, this is absolutely worth the money, because it's going to take you a while to perfect the game. It's going to take you a while to beat the damn game, even at five stages.
Nice.
But if you're that kind of guy where it's like, I need to be able to just breeze through my game, and then that breeze has to take me 10 to 20 hours, yeah, this is probably not for you. So don't go about buying it just so you can complain about it later. I do know people like that where there's nothing wrong with it, mind you. It's just, if that's your mindset, this is not the game for you, because it is not 10 to 12 hours with an easy run, minimal challenge. It is maybe 10 to 20 hours with maximum challenge, which means you're going to break your knuckles to get what you need to get done. So
nice. So it sounds like if you've been waiting 20 years to play this one at home, you're going to want it. If you've never heard of this game before, you're probably not going to.
Pretty much. I mean, like, I think about back when Death Smiles came out on 360, when that was back before cave shooters were getting much due in the States, outside of, like, maybe niche importers at arcades. And people were clamoring for more cave games to play. You heard about all these games they were releasing in Japan that we never had access to. It was like, I want to play more of that stuff. And then Death Smiles made me go, man, I need more of these, my damn self. This game is amazing. Well, guess what? If you're that guy who was saying that back then, here they're giving them to you. Yeah, here's a bunch of the shit. You should buy them then. Yeah, I think it's a lot like that. Like, those games are worth the money so long as you know what you're getting into and that's what you want to get into.
Awesome. I cannot wait for that one to come out so I can play it myself. Because as we're recording this, it's not out, and I want to fucking play it.
When does it come out again?
The 4th on Xbox One and PS4, $34.99.
Ah, sweet. In that case, it'll be ready soon.
So, yeah, I was jealous of this one. But next game to talk about is, first off, I'm going to apologize in advance for all of the words I butcher with this one. Next game to talk about is called Hakuoki Edo Blossoms, developed by Idea Factory and Design Factory, published by Idea Factory International, released March 13th on Steam for $29.99. Fighting along the Shinsugumi, the young Chizuru will romance the famous warriors of Japan's Bakumatsu period through a series of engaging stories and dramatic events. Find true love in the journey to Edo. Your choices decide your fate. Our friend Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in a review, and I'm going to butcher a whole lot more names, so bear with me. Hakuoki Edo Blossoms, and it is an adventure otome visual novel game. Is that the word, otome?
Yeah, or otome.
Otome, okay. Otome games are games made for girls, typically highly emotional and aimed at netting guys. Usually they're dating sims or visual novels, so yeah. This game is the second half of another game that was created in the past. That game was split in half when put on Steam. The first one, Kyoto Winds, and the second one, Edo Blossoms. You don't need to play the first to enjoy this one, as each is fine as a standalone game, and there's a bit of story added to let you know generally what happened in the first game. You start your game choosing which guy you want out of a group of guys. There's 12 total, plus your own solo story. Each story is about 4 to 5 hours long. You play as Yukimura, a young girl who was looking for her father in the first game and immediately got caught by some monsters. You were saved by members of the Shinsengumi, and because you learned of the monsters, you're forced to stay with them since they're also looking for your father. The game revolves around you choosing a guy that you want to romance, then playing through their route. There's a few choices you can make through each chapter. Most characters have 4, with an extra, quote, final chapter if you make the good end choices. Final chapter is fairly small, cute epilogue for their romance. This is not necessarily a feel-good story. The time period this is set in is based on the end of the Shinsengumi's existence, the end of the samurai age. Historically, the Shinsengumi, they were eradicated, butchered. They fought for the continued samurai way and went against the newly fashioned guns of the time. You can guess how well that went. You don't bring a knife to a gunfight. their end was the epitome of that saying. So yeah, the start of this one, you've already lost people from the end of the first game. The Shinsengumi's already falling apart, so while your story's cute and nice with the man you love, the world around you is just fucking crumbling down. Wow.
This sounds brutal.
The individual stories are really interesting. The stories are each rather short, but they pack a punch in the gut of emotion. I think every one of them I played has made me cry at least one time, if not two or three. However, that's kind of where the dissonance will be for people. Guys aren't usually interested in super emotionally packed stuff, let alone being a timid girl going after guys. I'm not sure how many guys will like this simply because it's an otome. Was that it? Otome?
Yeah, I call it otome. If otome. Someone says otherwise, guess what? They taught us something.
The emphasis on the third syllable, otome. Otome.
Otome. Otome.
Otome. Maybe? Otome. Maybe. This is why I hate pronouncing things. I'm terrible at pronunciating. But anyway, it's made straight up for girls. It's all voice acted amazingly, I might add. Great thing about this stuff is it's all based off historical documents. These men, they existed. Their positions were real. Granted, obviously, every media that's based on this time period takes liberties with the characters and such. I mean, obviously, there weren't monsters back then.
But they were all wooed by timid girls.
Always. That's just how life is. You are wooed by young girls.
Timid girls.
Young, timid girls. Oh, man. But their personalities in general look have been used in a plethora of media over the years, giving them very defined personalities and looks. This game sticks to that stuff, which gives each character a vastly different personality, which makes them feel even more like individuals. Story-based romances are mostly really well done. I think some of them aren't as good, but I'm also not a timid person by nature. Women were back then, so obviously I didn't relate to every story. Honestly, I think if you like visual novels, this is for you, even if you're not really into guys. I mean, I'm a lesbian and I liked it. This could also be a good one to get people into the genre if they like samurai stuff, since this is focused on the time period for a lot of samurai stuff. The only things I have to say against it, really, is that Yukimura is timid as fuck, which is how women were, so that's only a minor annoyance more than anything. The other is that some of the love options, most of them even, have been turned partly into monsters like vampires, so there's lots of pseudo-sexual blood play in the romances, which might be creepy to you. It was me a couple of times, but, you know, most of the time it's fine. So for $30, yeah, I think it's totally worth a buy. I'd say even get the first one if you're not sure. I think it adds to the overall story anyways.
And it's funny because there's an otome game that I actually own that I keep telling myself start playing and I never got around to it. But it's upstairs.
Which one?
Sweet Fuse. Have you ever heard of that one?
No.
Apparently it was the one where you are the niece of Keiji Inafune. You are trapped in an amusement park that is set to explode by a terrorist pigman.
What the fuck?
The goal of the game is to find Keiji Inafune and save him into his theme park. And also find love. Because that's what you do.
That is amazing.
It's like, I saw that game. I was like, I don't even care about the love shit. I want to play this ridiculous premise. Some pig terror is blowing up KG in a food A's amusement park. How does that even get put on paper?
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about that one later after the show. But there's one more game for you to talk about, and that is called Reverie, developed and published by Rainbite. This one came out March 29th on the Vita for $12.99. With restless spirits threatening the safety of Toromi Island's inhabitants, Ty must venture through dangerous dungeons and across a variety of environments to put the spirits to rest, all in a summer holiday. Brunel, tell me about this one.
Well, basically, you are this kid who shows up on an island after being told from the game, anyway. I see his mom told him, and the game's telling you what the mom told him. About the legend of this island, which involved a kid who was out with his brothers fishing for food, and the kid fishes up an island. And in jealousy, his brothers kill him, or he drowns. I can't remember if they killed him or if he just fell in the water, but he drowns. and then their souls are what haunt the island. So essentially, you land on an island and you end up mysteriously ending up on a quest to save the island from destruction as the restless souls lose their ever-loving goddamn minds. So it's essentially the classic Zelda-style game. Think how we were talking about Blossom Tales not too long ago, but now with a little boy on a vacation. And I think it's kind of hilarious how you are this kid, but everybody and their mom has you doing work for them. Like, there's a construction crew's like, yo, get us some food, we're hungry. And another one's like, get the rats out of our garden. I'm like, I'm only here on vacation. You don't even know me. I'm like 9. But you run around, you get like the traditional like gear that you would find like in a Zelda game. Like, you can go into dungeons, which, funny enough, the first dungeon is the basement of your grandparents' house. Like, go find me my book. And I'm like, oh, okay, there's a little small quest to go get my grandfather's picture book. And you go on a cell, and it's like, here's a big dungeon. And the boss is a giant, this isn't a spoiler in the damn trailer. The boss is a giant washing machine that is possessed by an evil spirit. It's a fun game to play. I honestly enjoyed it. Side fun fact, there's also like a weird arcade shooter in the game, which is attributed to one of the collectible item in the game, which is feathers. You beat a high score, you get a feather. But the game is fun. It's traditional Zelda style. You go into a dungeon, solve some puzzles, get a dungeon item, use it to ultimately reach and beat a boss. But there are some issues that I did have with the game from a personal standpoint.
And let's hear them. What kind of issues?
Think like how we talked about Witch in the Hundred Night, where I felt enemy variety was lacking. This game definitely has a weird lack of it. Like, the majority of the game, even as far as I got, which is, I'm pretty sure I'm near the end. I'm like pretty much going to the final boss now. You pretty much spend the majority of your time fighting weasels and rats of different colors and bumblebees. Every once in a while you'll see some birds. There's different varieties of bird and, like a hopping statue you'll see. There's some weird guys in there, which are pretty cool. But most of the enemies are like those first guys I mentioned, which is kind of annoying. But as the game progresses, I did start to kind of enjoy the dungeon puzzles. So to give you an example of something that I thought was going to be dumb, but ended up working out pretty well. One of the later dungeons, you get a dungeon item. It is a rock with googly eyes. I'm not even making that up. It's just a googly guy pet rock. That is the dungeon item. I'm like, what the hell am I doing with this stupid thing? It's just a pet rock. But it is used as a switch to press switches. And you can also smack it and send it across the map to do different things. Like, you can say, okay, I need to ricochet off these walls to get in there like a hockey puck. And it pretty much sits there, eventually slows and stops, and you're like trying to space it up and land it on the switch to open a door to get through another section. So they take these components, and around the time you get that googly-eyed rock, the puzzles start to get pretty fun. Complicated, but not too complicated. Like, you're not going to find yourself going, well, I can't play this anymore. I don't understand what I'm doing. But they're the satisfying to solve puzzles. Like, oh, I figured it out. This was kind of nice and fun to dabble with.
So they're rewarding, but they're not brutal.
Exactly. But it takes a little, you have to get to that point. But the game itself is actually not even that long. So there's no slog to reach the sweet stuff. And I did enjoy exploring the island and talking to the different characters and things of that nature. And I did like the odd aspect of some of the imagination that went like a few of the dungeons that you come across. Like, don't go into this game looking for realism, because you're not going to get it. Yeah. You're going to get a wacky game with a kid who's beating things with a yo-yo.
Game has gotten a lot of early comparisons to Earthbound. What are your thoughts on that?
The Earthbound comparisons only really go as far as the character artwork. If anything, I would say it's more like a cross between Star Tropics and Zelda.
Mm.
Because, I mean, like, you can't jump or anything, but I feel like some of the inventory items and the exploration makes me think of Star Tropics. But, of course, dungeon puzzles and dungeon items and dungeon boss keys makes me think of Zelda.
It makes you think. This is a game kind of modeled after Earthbound, Zelda, and Star Tropics. Why isn't it on the Switch, right?
I do honestly wonder about that, though. There was like this weird inkling in me when I was playing the game. I was like, maybe it was like them going, you know, you won't even bring me Mother 3. I'm just going to put this on the damn PSP. PSP to need some games, and you won't even give me Mother 3.
Well, thankfully, the developer confirmed that it is coming to PS4 as well. And then after the PS4 release, they are going to look into Switch and possibly Xbox as well. So I think the more consoles, the merrier. I hate exclusives, and I'd love to see this on everything.
Oh, I agree. Like, I'm one of those people where I feel like exclusives are what make people typically want to buy one console over another, but I feel like exclusives should generally, unless there's some kind of money being handed to help pay for development, exclusives should stick to first and second parties. Third party should be like, hey, I'm going to get it to whoever I can get it to. Like, you heard about, I'm not sure you heard about that. Remember we did review Blossom Tales. I think I did the PC and you did the Switch version of it. Apparently, the release of the game on the Switch literally saved the company. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really shocked. I was like, holy crap. Because the company outright said, the sales of this game on the Switch have allowed us to stay in business. Like, I did not expect to see something that specific, but I was like, geez, if that's not a sign to say put your crap on where you can get it, I don't know what is.
Damn. Yeah, everything seems to do better on the Switch anymore, it seems.
I understand. I partly understand why, though. I mean, it's a the system itself is very convenient. I consider it the convenience console. Like, when PlayStation tried to do the whole, we can link the Vita and the PS4 together, and people were trying to claim it was convenient. Like, that shit's not convenient. You got to leave the PlayStation on at all times, or like on rest mode or whatever the hell you got to do, and then network connect to the PS4 to remote play to your Vita. That shit's not convenient. That's a pain in the ass. Whereas the Switch is, I want to go portable. I'm just going to pick it up.
The Switch is what they wanted the Vita to be, which hopefully that will be a good sign for this game hitting the Switch. But, I will say I'm thrilled to see the Vita getting something new. It's too long since Vita gets stuff anymore. So
I agree. Like, it's the thing where for as much as people like the love on the PSVR or whatever, it's why I won't buy the PSVR, because the Vita was my thing and it got kind of dropped. So it feels like anytime a third party's like, you know what? This system can't die yet. We want to put a game on it. It's like one more. Like, yes, let's remove that coffin lid just for a little bit longer. Screw you, Sony. We can keep this thing running. We don't need you to keep the system alive. We can keep doing this thing. Like, they're talking about removing, was it, the PS Plus benefits from the Vita next year? I would love if the developers like, we're going to keep making games for it. Even if PS Live, even if PS Plus doesn't work for it anymore, we don't give a shit. Games are still coming out on it. Hey, we just canceled PlayStation Live. The PS Online store, you can't buy games off anymore. Third parties figured out a weird hack. They opened their own store and started selling games on the Vita. It's like the indie darling, like, well, compared to, like,
they're not shutting the store down next year. You're just not going to get free games and plus anymore for the Vita.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm just saying, like, as the extreme case, like, a year from then, it's like, now we're just canceling the store. No more online. Like, screw you. We're going to do it anyway.
We're going physical with everything. Exactly. 4 meg downloadable game. It's going to be on a cartridge and it's going to cost $40.
And collectors will eat that shit up. God, there's a game right called Cirque Eats a Lot coming up this week from Play Asia. They're doing the physical release of that thing. Yeah. And I look, collectors were on the collectors groups like, oh, I gotta get Cirque Eats a Lot. I'm getting a collector's edition. Like, yeah, apparently it's collectible now. So if it's a collectible, it means it's worth buying. Like,
obviously.
It's such an odd gold mine. It's like, I scrutinize your collections, people. Everything physical doesn't need to be owned. I don't know, whatever. Cirque Eats a Lot, collectible, whatever, mud job.
Who knows, maybe Reverie will get a physical edition one day.
Honestly, if Reverie got a physical edition, I'd consider it, because, again, it has a bit of heart to it. I like the fact that it is a nice little indie-developed product, and I'm actually curious about how long it was in development for. I might have to look that up later.
I'm not too sure, but...
The last thing worth mentioning, because I know you're about to say for $100, but I wanted to make sure... One thing I thought was interesting from a charm perspective is, like, I think this game was developed by New Zealanders. There's a number of moments where they'll either use, like, slang straight out of New Zealand, or they'll reference Kiwis. There's a trophy for finding, like, a curling bio lab or something. like you walk into a cave and there's, like, people in glass cylinders, like in cryo tubes. And there's no real indication that this is related to, like, superhuman curling athletes, but the achievement's related to finding the bio lab for curling. Like, this shit. Like, it's hilarious. Like, there's a lot of just weird New Zealand quirks and charms to this game. Nice. That I just looked at. I was like, this is clearly done by people from New Zealand. There's no way this is not. No way.
Well, you already know what the question is, so Pernell, what's the answer?
If you're looking for some Zelda time and you're okay with it being not on the hyper long side, I think it's worth the money. It's fun.
Cool. I want to get this myself. I really, really, really hope this hits more platforms because I don't know. I just, exclusives. I don't like exclusives. They got to stop. Show up otherwhere, other places, elsewhere. Two words different. I can't talk. Whatever. Purnell, always good having you on chat about this stuff.
If you can port it, they may come.
If you port it, they will come. Purnell, do you have any final thoughts to wrap it all up?
Go to hell, Winter.
All right, next game to talk about is called RBI Baseball 18, developed and published by Major League Baseball Advanced Media. Released March 20th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. iOS March 27th for $6.99. Coming soon to Switch and Android. Checking this one out. Jacob Garner, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Doing all right. I would give a synopsis, but, you know, it's baseball.
Yeah, there's really not much of a plot with this game.
It's like baseball.
You hit a ball with a stick, and then you run around some bases before the other people tag you out.
Well, I guess I could give a little quick rundown. As developed by MLB for the first time, RBI Baseball 18 delivers an all-new franchise mode, home run derby mode, detailed player models, animations, high-fidelity MLB ballparks, dynamic camera angles, stunning UI presentation, MLB 18, what else is here? It's showing off at the GDC, so that's kind of old info. Basically, it's this year's baseball game. That's not the show, right?
With updated rosters, which update fairly frequently. It might actually be by the day.
It might. I've seen it update like four times on me already. By the way, this release March 20th, we do want to explain that the reason you are only just now hearing this review is first we were asked to hold off due to issues with the Xbox One X version of the game. And then when we were about to record it a couple of days ago, Jacob, you told me that you ran into near constant problems with it.
Yeah, pretty much. That.
And I really didn't believe it because I've played the previous years and I didn't really see any of the issues you were talking about. And after playing it, I was like, holy shit, what happened to this game? And then just today, Sunday when we're...
No, it was Friday night.
Was it Friday it was night
whatever the first day of Major League Baseball's opening season is, which is either it was either Thursday or Friday, they released the patch that day, and it was like a huge like 700 meg patch to everything. And like if you go down the list, like they like it's updated this, fixed this, like
the thing is, if that was on Thursday or Friday, whatever it was, I played it on Saturday and I was still running into those issues. So I believe another patch was issued within the past day or so, which completely fixed nearly all of the major issues that we saw with the game. Like broken menus, broken tutorials, shit like that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, most of my issues, and I say most of my issues have been resolved with this patch.
Yeah, well, start at the top.
I was really pleased with how it plays today because I got to play it for a few more hours, and I'd actually say it's a completely different game.
It's like night and day.
Yeah.
And I told you that earlier today. I'm like, listen, you need to try RBI again before we record the review, because another patch came out and it fixed nearly all of the massive issues and bugs and problems that we ran into. But let's start at the top. What is RBI? Tell us about it.
Well, RBI's runs batted in.
Okay, Dick, listen. What did you think of RBI Baseball 18? Tell us about your time with it. Dick.
My thing is that I don't exactly have the most a lot of qualifications to go on with sports games. I'm not particularly big on them, but I'm a big fan of baseball, have been since I was a kid. So when Joe approached me for the Xbox One and iOS versions, I'm like, all right, yeah, I'll give it a shot. Pretty much, there's a lot of stuff to go over with this game.
It's like all the notes we had are for the pre-patched version, and it's...
Yeah.
Like, we ran in...
Right, how about we go with controls first?
Like, go ahead.
All right, so controls, honestly, they're very simplistic, almost to a point where that it's actually an issue, because when the game first came out, you were throwing nothing but fastballs, And it still seems to be, I mean, you can now control the speed of the pitch, like, within, like, a 20-mile-per-hour area, so it's still not great, and you can kind of control the ball, but for the most part, you're throwing fastballs the whole entire time. So there's not a lot of variety with it. Batting is pretty much the same thing. There's no way to really control, like, the amount of power that you're throwing behind, like, that you're, you know, throwing behind it when you hit the ball. You can control where you're standing in the batter's box, but that's about it. So it's just, it's simplistic, but too simplistic for what it needs to be. I did like how intuitive it was to when you were trying to get somebody out at the bases, because it uses X, Y, and B, or on the iOS version, it uses the touchpad for the various bases. Or wait, no, they got rid of that. Never mind. Disregard that. They actually updated the iOS version too. Okay. Crud. We're going to have to discuss both versions separately. All right.
Yeah. Well, so, let's stick with console first.
Okay, console first.
I do want to rebut your thoughts on the pitching. I didn't really have a problem trying to throw slight curves and stuff like that. It's obviously...
Well, today I didn't either.
Yeah.
But it's still not, you know, it doesn't really seem to be much of a difference.
It doesn't have a ton of pitch variety. There is slight variety. It does give you minor control over the left and right movement of it. It doesn't give you a lot of time to really mess with it, but you are able to throw some decent curves if you try. I was throwing some good ones, you know, starting off as a ball, it comes right in at the strike at the last second. So it is possible to throw some decent curves there.
Right. But going back with hitting, like, it almost seemed at random. Like, I don't know, maybe I just need, like, a bigger TV, but, like, there was no, like, almost tells with the game, like, as to, like, okay, this is when you should swing. And so it's just like, oh, well, it's too early, it's too late. You know, nothing ever seemed to be, you know, you would swing and hope for the best. And then you couldn't really just, like, I mean, there's no way to control where it's going to land, but it's just before the patch or patches, it was just like I wasn't getting anywhere. And today I finally actually been able to hit home runs, doubles, triples, stuff like that. So
nice.
Yeah, it's been a major improvement.
We could say whatever we want with reviewing this game, but I think people are going to have their minds made up. I know the past couple of years, the biggest gripe is, oh, this isn't the show, when it's not trying to be the show. This has always been intended to be a more casual pick up and play, not very complicated, just pick up and enjoy some baseball. It's supposed to bring you back to the NES days. And my biggest takeaway over the past 2 weeks with this game is they give a fuck. They've been working their asses off, patching this, making it better, improving it in whatever ways they can. It's still not the show. It's still not trying to be the show. But I'm impressed with how hard they've been working on improving this game this year.
Yeah, I'll give it that. I mean, this is the first entry into the series that I've had to play. But going back to the pick up and play thing, that's still an issue for me because the tutorials are like, they're way too simplistic even after the patch, like, where the tutorials actually work now.
Oh God. Yeah.
Pre-patch,
you could not finish the tutorials. There was just something broken.
Yeah.
But again, it's been fixed.
Well, the other thing is that in the tutorials, like, it would say like you had done something and you wouldn't have. Like, this time it's now fixed. So that's good. But the thing is that there, like, it's just, you start up an exhibition game and it throws you the tutorials very briefly. And then you're expected to just go off and play. I would like something that's more along the lines of, it's just a complete practice mode where you can just sit there and you can just, you know, whack baseballs all day, or you can just keep throwing pitches until you feel like you've gotten it right.
I'm guessing the hit pitches all day, that's home run derby mode.
To a degree. Yeah. But it's still not. I mean, because the home run derby thing is some guy like lobbing, you know, underhands to you, and you know, you just hit them as far as you can.
Well, yeah, it's home run derby. That's what it's supposed to be.
Well, right, but that's not.
I know. I was making a joke, asshole.
You know what? I hate you, Joe. You're terrible.
You're fired.
Good. Now I'll just go back and play South Park.
Oh, man. I appreciate the fact that they're trying with the new franchise mode that lets you play up to 10 years of the game, of seasons, if you want. And if that, you are that
that's
insane.
That's a lot of dedication.
It is. It's pretty.
I mean, that's good that they thrown it in, because, I mean, that is a pretty standard feature for sports games. Although,
see, I know a lot of sports games have like season modes and stuff like that, but to have a 10-year franchise, I'm kind of impressed with that. And the fact that players will actually age and deteriorate over those 10 years, I think, is neat.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just wish that there was more variety to that, because, I mean, it's just like you're either doing franchise, home run derby, or you're doing an exhibition game. There's no, like, you know, I don't know.
You're either playing steps. Baseball or playing baseball.
No, but like there's no variety. Like there's not like a lot of variety of the game modes. Like you're either stuck in your 10-year franchise or you're playing a one-off. And also, speaking of playing the one-off, one of the things that annoys me is that you can't save your exhibition games. So if you're in like in the sixth inning and you have to go off and do something, well, it sucks to be you, you know.
Press pause, turn your TV off.
Yeah, what if I had to go off and do something else on my Xbox?
I don't know, buy a second Xbox.
You know how long it took me to get this Xbox?
I'm half delirious right now. Deal with it. But I will say my biggest gripes with the game this year, I think visually some of the player models and faces look odd. And then I'm kind of bummed at the price being $30. Last year it was 20. The year before it was 20. The year before it was 20. The first $30 price tag was the Switch version of last year's game. And the guess was that it was due to the physical media of the Switch, which happens with a lot of games with that Switch tax. I'm right. Bummed to see the other versions getting that price bump now as well. If this was a $20 game, I think it would be a lot easier to get into and a lot easier of a recommendation to make, because it was it was a third of the price of the show, but now it's only half of the price of the show. And I don't know. I wish it was still $20.
Going back to the visuals with it, I actually did finally experience some of the graphic slowdown that early reviews had talked about. I was experiencing it today in Home Run Derby, so I'm in agreement with you on the models and stuff like that. Although with the TV my size, it really doesn't matter.
True.
So
both inches.
But like the game's still got quite a ways to go. But for $30, that's honestly a tad steep for me. If it was the $20 that the other versions were, I'd be all for it and say, like, you know, these guys are working hard to, you know, get the game updated, get it fine-tuned and stuff like that to where it actually needs to be. So, you know, blow the $20 and give them a chance. But for $30, you know,
it's a little bit of a tougher sell.
Yeah. You might want to wait till it's on sale.
Yeah.
But, you know, and honestly, I'm looking forward to next year, and I hope that they add more features to this game, because I was having a blast when I was doing Home Run Derby today. Like, I was actually supposed to be doing it 20 minutes earlier than when we were recording, but Joe kept messaging me.
Yeah.
And I was in the middle of a Home Run Derby, and I didn't want him to mess up my mojo, so I just kept ignoring your texts and calls.
Yeah, bitch.
Hey, I won, and I got the achievement, so...
Nice.
It worked.
GG. GG.
Thank you. You're now blocked.
Overall, $30 on this one. I'm going to give it somewhat of a hesitant try. I think if you're on PlayStation 4, there's no need to get this. Same as last year. The show is on PlayStation. It's the best baseball game on the market. And if you own PlayStation, that's the way to go. If you're on Xbox or Switch, when the Switch version comes out, if you've already played previous years, I think if you have the money to burn, it's decent enough to pick up and enjoy, especially with all the patches that they've done and all the work that they've been putting into it. If they keep working on the game and patching it and improving it, I think this could turn into something pretty solid. That price point is still my biggest issue, though.
Yeah, definitely at this point.
Now, how about that iOS version? Tell me about that one.
Originally, I was going to be recommending the iOS version over the Xbox One.
Pre-patch.
Yeah, pre-patch. But either way, I was still going to be very hesitant about it. It also has received a patch, and it has been updated quite a bit. I actually had to I had to toss a few games off my iPhone just so I can make more room for it.
Oh, wow.
So it pretty much plays like the other one. You have exhibition. Actually, it doesn't quite play it. Because all you have is exhibition and franchise. That's it. They've turned Home Run Derby into some sort of free-to-play separate game.
Yeah.
Which had a lot of people complaining because Home Run Derby was apparently the most fun thing to do, but then, everyone's wondering why it wasn't included. Including myself on that one. But that's neither here nor there, and I can review that another day. So everything's done with touch controls, because of course, Game Vice, God forbid, any game now should ever use it. now that I have the thing. but you use touch controls to, hit the ball, pitch it, all that kind of stuff. I really wasn't having that much more success today than I was previously in terms of pitching control. Batting, I seem to have, I don't want to say less luck than on the updated Xbox One version, but it's still, if that one seems to be even more of a crapshoot, whether I'm going to strike or whether I'm going to hit anything, I think due to the size of the screen, you're just pretty much swinging and hoping for the best. The controls are fairly intuitive though, but unfortunately you now can't control which base you're going to throw to. I think the game expects you to touch the screen as to which base you're theoretically throwing to.
Maybe.
It's just, I don't know.
I've had no time with the iOS version myself, so I can't really chime in on this one.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't know. I'd say that the Xbox One version is far superior to this, and I mean, if you really need that baseball experience on the go, I guess you could get this, but at the same time, you can't save your exhibition games or you're stuck in franchise mode, and it doesn't include the Home Run Derby, so you have to download that separately.
No.
Graphics are decent for an iOS game, but it's still nothing to get excited about. And I believe that they upped the price this year too, because I think it's $8. To $7 or $8 this year, and I think it was $6.99. Yeah, and I think it was $4 or $5 for the previous versions.
Yeah, I guess it's just the increasing cost of game development.
Yeah. Honestly, the iOS version, I'd also wait to get it on sale. It's not terrible. I've definitely played worse baseball games on my phone, but yeah,
$7 is a bit steep.
It feels like it. On the plus side, they do update the rosters just like the console version, so you got that going for it. But the fact that it doesn't include Home Run Derby, and Home Run Derby has become a free-to-play thing, you can pay to get bonuses and stuff like that for it. I don't know.
It would have been good to see traditional Home Run Derby just included with the version you paid $7 for.
Right. That's one of those things, I'm a bit miffed that they didn't do it. I still have the same gripes about the tutorials. They all work now, again, on the iOS version as well, but at the same time, they're still just, simple. Do this. Okay, great. Do this. Great. Yeah. All right. You're good. Bye.
One last thing I did want to mention for both versions, I really, really dug the soundtrack. There's some good licensed music on there, including Royal Blood, which I love. So,
Yeah, I thought it was okay, but the game didn't tell you what was being played, though.
Yeah, that would have been helpful. I know they have a list of all the songs in the info section, the credits section of the game. Would have been nice to see what was playing when it started. So, who knows? With how much they've been working on updating the game, maybe that'll get added eventually.
Yeah.
I think this would be a good game to revisit in a month or two and see how it shapes up.
Yeah, I mean, I'd definitely be down for doing that, because, I mean, I know this is going to sound really negative, but had we reviewed the, like, when we were originally going to review this on Thursday, I had told you, it's just like, after this review, I'm deleting it off my Xbox One. Yeah. Now after this, like, now after this update and the complete overhaul, it's staying.
Nice.
Like, I'm definitely down to revisit it in a month.
Cool. Well, I know later on this spring, we're going to see the Switch version of the game, the Android version of the game, as well as a Home Run Derby VR game releasing, which should be pretty interesting. So when those come along, maybe we'll revisit the game and take a look at how it's shaped up over the past couple of months.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Oh, Jacob, always okay-ish good having you on.
Yeah, it's all right, I guess.
You have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
I applied for a job with the people of Superhot. Fingers crossed that they're listening and that, you know, they actually look at my resume and don't shred it.
Super hot.
Hot.
Super
hot.
Super hot.
I love super that game. It's amazing.
Hot. Super.
Wait, are you just going to keep saying this over and over again?
Super hot.
You're the worst, Joe.
All right, next game to talk about is called Adventures of Bertram Fiddle, Episode 1, A Dreadly Business, developed by Rumpus Animation, published by Chorus Worldwide Games. That is a mouthful. Released March 29th on Switch for $4.99, and a quirky take on a Victorian London inhabited by strange characters with even stranger noses, self-proclaimed leading explorator Bertram Fiddle finds himself in a bit of a pickle. Help him follow the clues and track down the elusive serial killer known only as Jeff the Murderer before he strikes again. Checking this one out, Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing great.
Did you find Jeff the Murderer?
Well, no, I haven't found Jeff the Murderer yet.
I love that name. Just Jeff the Murderer.
Oh, this game's got great names in it.
So what is Adventures of Bertram Fiddle?
So Adventures of Bertram Fiddle is a nice sort of classic take on the good old point-and-click adventure. Not adventure so much, but like, you know, a point-and-click puzzle game. So you're like your Monkey Island or, you know, King's Quest or Discworld, you know, things like that. Like a couple of the games I've talked about on the Switch already. Like, not so much Long Reach, but I guess more like that other one, whatever it's called. The Dark Side Detective.
Ah.
Only this one takes place in merry old Victorian England, and indeed the main character, Bertram Fiddle, does look like he has a pink croissant for a nose. It's got a very distinct art style. There's a picture of his mother, and like none of her facial features are where they're supposed to be. Like, eyes where her ears are supposed to be, nose like off somewhere, and it's very surreal, but I don't know, for some reason kind of familiar.
Interesting. Like, very interesting.
Yes. And so your quest with old Bertram Fiddle is that he is longing for adventure because it's been a good couple of months, I guess, or something since his last exploration. He's got this very high-pitched Terry Thomas style, like, English accent, which I thought would be annoying, but actually the voice acting is really good in this, and all of the actors deliver these lines in this absurd, stuffy British way, but, like, I don't know. It's pretty hilarious how a lot of the lines are delivered. So I like that. That's a good mark. But yeah, so he's bored, he's listless, he wants more adventure, and plus his wife wants him to get a job.
Been so, there.
Yeah, so he has to work fast to avoid the ultimate punishment of a 9-to-5 job. So he takes his trusty, for whatever reason, his assistant is a cyclops.
What? Wait, what?
His assistant is a cyclops. He's got one eye and he's very strong. And he has like a kind of Spanish accent for whatever reason. And he's your other person that follows you around everywhere. So he's kind of like the Watson to your Sherlock Holmes, which, by the way, Sherlock Holmes does factor into this game as a character. So we're dealing with contemporaries here.
Nice.
And and so it becomes this thing that's actually pretty interesting. So it's like you can either use the doctor to observe something, which, by the way, the game's very good about if you hold down a button, it will actually show you everything that can be looked at, rather than having to click all over the map and find some secret thing. You'll actually be able to very easily figure out what all can be accessed. And, of course, you know, you pick up items, sometimes you combine the items and then you use them in absurd ways to get through puzzles. So, you know, that's point and click du jour. But yeah, with the addition of this other character, your strong cycloptic friend, he, serves as the muscles. So if you click on him first and tell him to, and then point at something, then you're telling him to go like move something or beat something up or whatever. So it's a different way to interact with stuff. So you've got like, you got it coming from two points. Another good point that I liked about this game that separates it is that occasionally it will actually break into an action sequence, where the controls, like for instance, there is a early on in the game, you're trying to chase down a criminal who is doing something suspicious, and you have to chase him through a crowd of people. So it takes off into an automatic runner style thing where you have to avoid the crowds and chase down the guy who's also trying to avoid the crowds.
Nice.
Yeah. So you got little sections like that to kind of break up the, you know, point to the thing and walk to it and then talk about it.
This game sounds absolutely ridiculous. So I'm hearing nothing but the fact that it's funny, it's crazy, it's quirky. Are there any bad points to this game?
None that I found so far. I mean, typically with these puzzle games, the only thing you really run into is, you know, sometimes the solutions to puzzles can be pretty abstract. And I guess the other thing is that, like, the inventory, it took me a while to figure out how to actually access my inventory. It turns out it's just this little pull tab on the side of the screen. But you actually have to, like, if you're playing with a controller, like, you have to move the cursor all the way over to the left and, like, pull the tab out. And I don't know, it just figures they could have had a little bit more consideration for the controller. But that's really, this game, I think, at the end of the day, is meant to be played on the touchscreen because it really excels that way.
Cool. Well, overall, for $5 on episode one, what do you think of this?
I think go ahead and get it. Support it so that episode two comes out, because obviously we're going to want to see this whole thing.
Very true. And solely based on your description and the fact that there's croissant nose and Cyclops buddy and action scenes, I already bought it during your talking.
Huzzah!
Yeah.
So. I think you'll really enjoy it. This is the kind of absurd, cartoony game that I think the Switch excels in. Like, kind of reminds me a little bit of Stick It to the Man, even though it's a different interface. It's just that this one is more Englishy, and I just really love uptight English humor, especially like Victorian stuff. Everybody kind of looks a little dead. Ooh, tip, tip, studio. And stuff like that.
Yeah, this one looks good. I can't wait for more episodes. But we have one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Bridge Constructor Stunts, developed by Clockstone Software, published by Head Up Games. This one came out March 27th on the PS4 for $9.99. Stuntman and engineer in one? No problem with Bridge Constructor Stunts. Build imposing ramps and loops to reach your goal in the diverse stages. But building structures alone isn't enough this time. You sit behind the wheel of the vehicles yourself and have to maneuver them skillfully to the goal. Chris, what did you think of Bridge Constructor Stunts?
Well, it definitely served as kind of a throwback to when I first started doing reviews for this show. Because I think Bridge Constructor, Extreme or something, Or was it some other kind of, like, one of the Bridge Constructor games is one of the first games I actually reviewed here.
It was probably the original then, because there were, I believe there's three Bridge Constructor games. There's Bridge Constructor, Bridge Constructor Stunts, and then Bridge Constructor Portal.
Yeah, it's the regular one. So yeah, now we've come back around full circle to this one.
Circle of life.
Yeah. And bridges. So yeah, this is a, this is basically the Bridge Constructor game. The one where, you know, you basically kind of connect the dots, use, the materials provided, sometimes working within a budget, often working within the bounds of physics. you have to build a usable ramp. And then the twist to this one is that once you do that, you actually control the vehicle that you are, that you're attempting to go over, and you're also responsible for racking up tons of points through stunts. Not only stunts, but you also have to gather up like some items on your way in order to meet some other kinds of ancillary goals.
Yeah. Now, I played this one a while back on Xbox One, and I found it to be a little bit overwhelming at times. Like, it starts off easy enough where you're just controlling the car, and then it gives you simple, like, finish constructing this, or, you know, move these pieces here or there. And it just seemed the further in that the game got, the more complex it got. And normally with Bridge Constructor, building the bridges, okay, I could figure that out. In a driving game, getting through everything, okay, I could figure that out. But putting the two together, it was really straining me. And it's like, well, wow. I put all this work building this, and then I go off the jump and I completely whiff the landing. Now I have to completely rework this. Or what if I just accelerate slower? Or what if I, you know, do two flips instead of one? Will that help me get, like, it was, it,
yeah,
it was, I don't know. It was, it felt so much more stressful than normal Bridge Constructor.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of got that. Like, the car that you get, the tow truck definitely felt sluggish. It actually feels more like you're driving in slow motion. And there doesn't seem to be a way to, like, boost yourself or anything like that. So you really do have to kind of pay attention to the physics of, like, momentum and velocity rather than just pound the accelerator and go.
Yeah.
Yeah, for instance, I had to figure out the finer points of using a backflip versus a front flip and what that does for your speed. As often, like, most of what would happen is that I would commit to one flip and then the vehicle would just keep going and I'd end up landing like upside down.
That is every single stage for me.
So if it does feel like more of the difficulty is in actually controlling the vehicle than building the bridges. Because the bridges, like, yeah, at first they're very like, well, this is just what you do. It's, you know, just, yeah, connect the lines. We've already given you some ghost lines, so just follow those.
Yeah, but just like Bridge Constructor, the further in you get, the more complex and crazy, and just some of these later stages in the game are just insane.
Nice. I didn't get to the later stages, so, but I mean, having played through a majority of the first game, I can say that, yeah, they're very good about really sort of driving home the necessity of, like, kind of knowing your physics and being able to, you know, do some pretty good guesswork or math work, I guess. I don't know. Do people do math?
Is that the thing with letters?
Sometimes letters, sometimes numbers. Don't know why they couldn't just do it with numbers.
True. Well, speaking of numbers, for a 9 followed by two other 9s, what do you think of Bridge Constructor Stunts?
Well, it depends on where the period is and all that.
After the first 9.
Okay. After the first 9. Okay, so basically, if you are a fan of Bridge Constructor, if you just so happen to be one of the few and the proud, then this is a natural evolution of what you would expect from a game. Because, I mean, Bridge Constructor already has this kind of built-in learning curve. Like, adding the sort of fussy racing or fussy, like, you know, stunt driving game in there, you know, you know what you're getting into. So it does add that, like, kind of cool element of, like, well, now that I've done this, let's see how elaborate I can make it. So I like that aspect of it, and I would say it's worth it based on that. For anybody who's, like, new to the genre, I would say if you're just looking for construction, go ahead and go with the original. But this stunt driving sequence is actually pretty cool. And because you don't necessarily have to have the vehicle in one piece in order to complete a level, you can do some pretty wild stuff on your way through the level. I've definitely won stages by crossing the checkered flag as a flaming heap of rubble.
And that's the way to do it, man. That is absolutely exactly the way to do it.
That's stunt driving.
Personally, I'm going to give this one a try. I think the bridge building is awesome. The stunt driving is awesome. Mixing them together, just for me personally, is a bit overwhelming. I would love to see Clockstone make a straight up stunt racer game. I think that would be amazing. So many times I was playing this and hitting different jumps and different loops, I'm like, man, this could be like a spiritual successor to Uniracers.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I would echo that. Yeah, sure. I would sign off on that and just add in that if you're going to make a pure stunt racing game, make it a little faster.
True.
Don't need to feel like we're, you know,
using unicycles.
Yeah. Unicycles. Yeah. I mean, obviously add in unicycles and then make it Uniracers, but,
I'm telling you, Rockstar, they need to hold off on making Grand Theft Auto for a while and just go old school and bust out a new Uniracers game.
That would be great. Oh, is that who worked on the original?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Rockstar before they were Rockstar. Unless I'm thinking of a different game and now I just look like an asshole. But one of the two.
Well, that's okay.
50-50 on that. So.
Yeah, I'm not gonna Google against you on this one.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm just gonna agree.
I'm just gonna go with my memory and think whatever. I'm close enough, right?
Right. Close enough for everyone.
I've only been doing close this enough for 5 years. Internet. I can't remember everything.
I can't remember anything.
Who are you?
What were we talking about?
I don't know, but this seems like a good point to end the show. So thank you, Chris, for joining and chatting about the games with me. Thanks to everyone else for dropping by and handling their reviews. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
I did, but then I forgot them.
Stepped inside. it's unbearable, the words erupt from my brain. My time is terrible, I need to learn to refrain. I can't derail and then distract, or just some of each. And in that instance you suppose I choose lack of speech. It's on my mind, but I can never time it right to speak. I've learned to be fine, knowing that I'm inclined to just forget this week. How do you do? When are you bluffing? Wow, closing my mouth can be a tough thing. Now I'm the interrupting cow. I don't want to lose my thought. It's unimportant and I should know better by now. My thoughts an orphan and there is no home to be found. I'm interrupting and there is no means of escape. I'm Teddy Ruxpin, so please just press stop on the tape. It's on my mind, but I can never time it right to speak. I've learned to be fine, knowing that I'm inclined to just forget this week. How do you do? When are you bluffing? Wow, closing my mouth can be a tough thing. Now I'm the interrupting cow. I don't want to lose my thought. Time it right to speak. I've learned to be fine, knowing that I'm inclined to just forget this week. Inclined to just forget this week.